detailing the whys and the wherefores of Krishna's appearance in the Bhagavad Gita. So, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Now, before I talk about the appearance, I want to kind of read some of the verses leading up to text 10. Text 10 is a very important verse. All these verses are. But we'll kind of lead up. Krishna is giving a little explanation of the history of the Bhagavad Gita and his appearance in the material world. So maybe some of you know first the first verse. We can chant. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Imam Vivasvate Yogam Proktavan Hamabhyayam Vivasvamana Vepraha Monodikshvaka Vebravit. The personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, said, I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god, Vivasvan, and Vivasvan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshvaku. So what form of yoga is that? At the end of the third chapter, Krishna described how one should use one's intelligence to understand that one is beyond the intelligence, and beyond the body, and in this way control the enemy known as lust. So this yoga is the buddhi yoga. He's talking about using one's intelligence in Krishna consciousness in bhakti yoga, which is otherwise known as buddhi yoga. So this is the yoga he's referring to here, by which we can overcome our real enemy, which is material desire, and transform it into spiritual desire. So now he's describing how millions and millions of years ago he spoke this imperishable, eternal science of yoga to the sun god, Vivasvan, and it came down in turn to his son and then to Ikshvaku. Then he says, Evam parampara praptam, imam raja shayo viduhu, sakalene hamhata, yogo nashtak parantapa. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of the cyclic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in the course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. So due to the influence of time, this transcendental science of bhakti yoga is periodically lost in society. It's just the nature of time to destroy things. And so Krishna periodically comes himself to reinstate it, or he sends his representative, the spiritual master and other saints, to reinstate this science. Then he describes why Arjuna is a proper recipient of this knowledge. Sahevayamayatedya Yoga Prokta Puratanaha Bhaktosime Sakacheti Rahasyam Yetaruttamam. That very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme is told today by me to you because you are my devotee as well as my friend and can therefore understand the transcendental mystery of this science. So if we want to understand the mystery of God and our relationship with God and the science of Bhakti Yoga, which is establishing that connection, we have to follow the principles by which we can become dear to Krishna. And then that truth will be revealed to us. It's not something we can just investigate on our own in a detached way or in an academic investigation. This is a process of revelation. And Krishna is now revealing it to Arjuna, as he says here, because he's his devotee and his friend. So then Arjuna asks the question, how is it, taking the role of a conditioned soul, well, how could Krishna, who is more or less the same age as Arjuna, apparently, speak this science to Vivasvan, who millions and millions of years ago? This is puzzling to Arjuna. So then Krishna answers, and he describes the difference between his appearance and our appearance. It says, many births both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them, but you cannot, O subduer of the enemy. So because our body is material and we are very minute, each time that we take a new body, we forget the previous one. Isn't it? Who amongst us here, you can raise your hand, can remember your previous birth? What was your name? What was your address? I can't remember. No one can remember. We can't even remember when we were little children, right? I mean, I remember the first thing I can remember. I was about 4 or 5 years old. I was riding a tricycle. And then that's it. And then, like, for a while, I can't remember anything. Then I remember little bits of, like, when I was in first grade. Isn't it? There's so many things you can't remember from your previous life. You remember high emotional points, isn't it? If someone got angry at you and you're scared, or some very positive emotion, then you generally remember. But otherwise, it's a big fog back there. What to speak of? Previous lifetime. But Krishna never forgets because he doesn't really change his body. His body is all spiritual. And although he may take different forms, it's still the same person. And it's pure spirit, pure consciousness, supreme. So he never forgets anything. As he says in the 7th chapter, Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjuna bhavishani tibhutani mamtu vedina kashchana. I know everything that's happened in the past, everything that's happening now, and everything that will happen in the future. But me, no one knows. This is God. Perfectly, purely, absolutely omniscient. We can never be in that position. So that's the difference. And how does Krishna appear? He says, I am unborn, Aja. But by my transient body never deteriorates. And although I'm the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form and Atma Maya, by my own energy, my own will. We don't appear by our own will. We're forced to appear by our karma in a certain position, a certain body, a certain species even, and a certain situation. Karma na divinetre na junto dehopapattaye is explained by Lord Kapiladeva, who's also Krishna. By the force of our karma, we are put into a certain womb and then take a certain birth. And then everything develops there, according to that. Krishna is not forced to do anything. He appears by his own sweet will, by his own internal energy, but he does it, as he will explain in the next verses, out of mercy, in order to help us to come back to him. So then the famous verse, we can all chant together, or I'll chant, you chant. Yada yada hi dharmasya. Glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam svajamyaham. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharat, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself or I manifest myself. Now one may ask, well, there's quite a decline in religion now and there's a very upsurge of irreligion. Where's Krishna? How come he didn't come now? We need him now, isn't it? So the answer is, he is here. He has come. He came a mere 500 years ago as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in person in order to spread the Dharma of the age, known as the Yuga Dharma, the chanting of Hare Krishna, mantra, in congregation especially. This is the... And he remains here as the holy name. This is explained by Krishna's Kaviraj, that the holy name itself is actually an avatar. Avatara means simply a descent. The word incarnation, we don't like so much. Karna, meat, you know, we don't like that. But we say, because it's the kind of the lingo in the West. But really, avatar means he descends in his original spiritual form. And the holy name is non-different from Krishna. It is said, Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purnak Shuddho Nitya Mukto Abhinat Van Nama Namino. That the holy name of Krishna is like a Chintamani gem. This is a very wonderful analogy. Chintamani gem is a spirit gem. It's like known as the philosopher's stone in the West. Whatever it touches becomes gold, you know. But the point is, it's chinta, conscious. When you touch the holy name to your consciousness awakens. You become more conscious. You become Krishna conscious. So it's a chintamani. It has a transforming effect. That's the whole idea. A good transforming effect. And why Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha? It is the very form of the relation between the living entity and the Lord. Chaitanya Rasa. Rasa means relationship, nectarian relationship of love. In that holy name, it is all there. And Namachintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha, Purnak Shuddho Nityamukno. It is complete in and of itself. If you just chant Hare Krishna, you'll perfect your life. That is a complete yoga system right there. Chanting Hare Krishna. Purna, complete. Shuddho, totally pure. If we chant, we become purified. Purified of what? Of illusion, of ignorance, of what we spoke of before, lust, leading to anger and greed, which we'll speak about in a few minutes. All of these impurities which prevent us from seeing ourselves and seeing God in our heart will become cleansed away. Nityamukto, eternally liberated. Not at all tinged by material energy, the modes of nature. Completely free. And the reason for all this? Abhinatvan namanamino. Because there's no difference between the name and the named. Is there a difference between our name and us? Of course. You know? If I say your name, Yamuna, Yamuna's here. But if he's outside the room and I say Yamuna, Yamuna's not here. I may feel separation from Yamuna. Pati, Prabhu. But he's not here. Right? But if I say Krishna, he's actually here. He says, Naham tishtami vaikunte yogino vidyeshu va yatra gayati mad bhakta tatra tishtami Narada. O Narada, I'm not in Vaikuntha. I'm not in the hearts of the yogis. But wherever my devotees are chanting my glories sincerely, that's where I am. Literally. Krishna is there. So we have to have faith in that. So Krishna is here now in the form of the holy name. And we can associate with him as much as we like, at any time, at any place. There's no hard and fast rules, simply by chanting that holy name. But there's an art to chanting purely, and that takes training under guidance of a realized soul. So that's the reason he comes. Then what does he do when he comes? Another famous verse. Paratananaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma sangstapanataya sambhavami yuge yuge. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. So this is Krishna's promise. Now, do we need that today? More than ever. We, as a little bit awake in Krishna consciousness, however much we are, we should understand the great value of giving Krishna's association to as many people as possible. This is really what it means to serve Krishna in this age. We have a great mission, really, to become well-versed in this knowledge and Krishna conscious, and to help others to become Krishna conscious. Because there's no greater need in this world than the science of Krishna consciousness. So people can become purified of this anger, of this fury, of this fear. Terrorism. What is terrorism? Bhaya. This is the bhaya that is mentioned here. How to become free of attachment, fear, and anger is through Krishna consciousness. So then he explains what is the advantage of understanding Krishna, of hearing about him, of becoming his devotee. Famous verse: Janma karma tame divyam evam yo veti tatvataha tyaktva dehum punarjanma naiti mam eti sorjana. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. So, understanding this, the transcendental nature of Krishna and his activities and everything about him, this requires training, again. This understanding is not a cheap thing. Now we can understand theoretically. This is called jnana. We should read Bhagavad Gita. But to attain vigyan, which is realized knowledge, that requires work. We need to place ourselves on the path of bhakti under the guidance of, as Krishna described earlier, one member of the parampara in the disciplic succession. And then we can come to know progressively the special transcendental nature of Krishna's lila, his activities, his form, his wonderful pastimes and name, and his entourage and everything about Krishna. Now, the next verse, I'm going to read the purport here. This is the verse I was thinking about. And here Krishna describes how one can become purified by this process. Vita raga baya krodha munmayam amupashrataha bahavo gyana tapasa puta munbhava magata. Being freed from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me. So I'm going to read this wonderful purport, and then we'll discuss. As described above, it is very difficult for a person who is too materially affected to understand the personal nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Generally, people who are attached to the bodily conception of life are so absorbed in materialism that it is almost impossible for them to understand how the Supreme can be a person. Such materialists cannot even imagine that there is a transcendental body which is imperishable, full of knowledge, and eternally blissful. In the materialistic concept, the body is perishable, full of ignorance, and completely miserable. Therefore, people in general keep this same bodily idea in mind when they are informed of the personal form of the Lord. For such materialistic persons, the form of the gigantic material manifestation is supreme. Consequently, they consider the supreme to be impersonal. And because they are too materially absorbed, the conception of retaining the personality after liberation from matter frightens them. When they are informed that spiritual life is also individual and personal, they become afraid of becoming persons again. And so they naturally prefer a kind of merging into the impersonal void. Generally, they compare the living entities to the bubbles of the ocean, which merge into the ocean. That is the highest perfection of spiritual existence attainable without individual personality. This is a kind of fearful stage of life, devoid of perfect knowledge of spiritual existence. Furthermore, there are many persons who cannot understand spiritual existence at all. Being embarrassed by so many theories and by contradictions of various types of philosophical speculation, they become disgusted or angry and foolishly conclude that there is no supreme cause and that everything is ultimately void. Such people are in a diseased condition of life. Some people are too materially attached and therefore do not give attention to spiritual life. Some want to merge into the supreme spiritual cause, and some of them disbelieve in everything, being angry at all sorts of spiritual speculation out of hopelessness. This last class of persons take shelter of some kind of intoxication, and their affective hallucinations are sometimes accepted as spiritual vision. One has to get rid of all three stages of attachment to the material world: negligence of spiritual life, fear of spiritual personal identity, and the conception of void that arises from frustration in life. To get free from these three stages of the material concept of life, one has to take complete shelter of the Lord, guided by the bona fide spiritual master, and follow the disciplines and regulative principles of devotional life. The last stage of devotional life is called bhava, or transcendental love of God. Om Gyana Tamarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chukshurun Miditam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him. So I find this purport very illuminating, because in here Srila Prabhupada is giving us insight into the impediments, kind of internal philosophical impediments, that prevent us from entering into this mysterious path of devotional service. So the first one is this raga. There's three things here: raga, bhaya, krodha. Raga here means material attachment. Bhaya means fear. And krodha means anger. Now, raga, when it's taken to mean this material attachment, generally 99.99% of the people are in this state. We are impelled by material attachment that we cultivate under the modes of nature. And these move us to act. And when we hear about something spiritual, something in this way, it doesn't click that this really has anything to do with us. We can take it or leave it, you know? let me just go out and try to enjoy, make some money, and go on with my life. So this is a great disease, an impediment, and people are unfortunate in this regard. The baya here has to do with the impersonal realization. If someone comes to the conclusion that this becoming attached to this world produces so much suffering. If you have a little intelligence, you can understand that our real problems in this life are not simply how to accumulate money, how to enjoy our senses, how to climb up the ladder of power and prestige in this world. That this, we can see all around us, that this simply produces anxiety and stress and war and dissension and general misery. And if you're a little intelligent, you can understand birth after birth, these attachments keep you bound to the material body with all of its multifarious difficulties. Let's run through them again, just to remind us. The threefold miseries of adibhautik, adiatmik, and adidaivik miseries. Adiatmik, those miseries, those difficulties or pains caused by our own body and mind. They are legion. Legion. How many was it? 50%? Huge quantity of the number of adults in this country take some kind of antidepressant. Maybe it's 30%. That's still like 100 million people in this country. Just imagine. Why? Because life has you down, gets you down, right? Things aren't working out, whatever. You know, all of your hopes, your dreams, whatever. You know? Antidepressant. Artificially, you feel happy. You see? But this is called adiatmic misery. And then that's just the mind, and there's the body. All of us have experience. We have some kind of bodily pain. Doesn't go away. You have to go to the doctor to buy some medicine, some sports injury. And as you get older, things start to break down. Adiatmik, very, very huge. $1 billion industry. Try to alleviate that. The medical healthcare industry. Adibhautik miseries. Other people. Wars. Insects. Locusts. Plagues. You know? You can make your own list. There are so many other living beings that can cause us so much trouble in this world, isn't it? Mostly other human beings. And then there's the adidaivik miseries, earthquakes. We're in earthquake zone here. We tend to forget at any moment. Our whole life can be changed, uprooted, right? Hurricanes. When I visit my friend in Alachua, you have to always keep your eye on the map, you know, what's coming. This, you know, it's like you're like in a shooting gallery. You know, this hurricane is coming over here. Drought, flood, adidaivik. Because you can't do anything about it. It's beyond our ability to control. We're helpless. So this is what it means to be in a material body, which is caused by material attachment. So those who are intelligent, they are afraid of these miseries. I don't want the misery. Therefore, their motivation is, let me get rid of the body. Body means suffering. Right? Personality is tied up with the body. Personality means eyes, ears, senses, wants, dislikes, all these. That's all we know of personality. It's tied up with the material body. Therefore, I don't want any personality equals body. I'll just be bodiless. I'll be pure spirit. This is the impetus to merge into the Brahman, the oneness of the Brahma Jyoti, you see? It's to get free from the miseries of this world. The impetus is fear. But fear is not really a very healthy motivation, is it? You don't want to be afraid all the time. You know? This is the stock and trade of the terrorists. Terrorists try to keep us afraid so that we'll act in a certain way. Right? Fear is not healthy for the soul. But this is also the impetus of the impersonalist. It's fear. Then the other thing is krodha. So you think of the personalist mayavadis. Krodha means anger. You go down this road, those of us who have been searchers for some years, I remember before I joined the movement, I joined at 25, so I had plenty of time to try this yoga, this person, that person. We're going back into the 60s now, into the heyday of Haight-Ashbury and late 60s. So many different ideas were starting to come from the East. And so I try this, try that, try this, try that. You know, still miserable. Nothing really worked for me. So I could have been in this category, anger. There is no ultimate philosophy. All is ultimately void. Absolute doubt and skepticism. That's your opinion, that's your opinion, that's your opinion. Let me just go into nothingness. That'll be my refuge. That's another disease. So one has to be free of all these. Material desire, of fear, of personality, and anger because of being cheated. Just because you get some counterfeit money doesn't mean you can renounce money. It says, money, that's a scam. No, you've been cheated by somebody, the counterfeit money. So you may have so many counterfeit philosophies that have induced you to follow them, but that doesn't mean that there isn't a true philosophy. One has to simply find it and search out and come in contact with the genuine eternal philosophy. So those who can avoid those, matmaya mamupashrita, and become absorbed in Krishna, fully in me. This word maya is very nice. It means to be full of something. Karunamayi, it's a feminine form, means full of mercy. Very popular name, Karunamayi, right? Krishna is Karunamoy, he is, or Kripamoy, right? He's full of mercy. So we have to be full of Krishna. It means are fully absorbed in thinking, feeling, and willing for Krishna. That's what it means here. Mamo Pashvata, taking shelter of me. Not taking shelter of some hallucination, some drug, some false philosophy, of Krishna. Taking shelter of Krishna through his pure representative. Then many, it's not that this hasn't happened before, jnana tapasa. Now, the cultivation of knowledge through austerity. This is part of what it means to become detached. We are addicted to so many different things in this world. Gross and subtle. You can become addicted to a philosophy and an idea. As you get older, it's harder to change all of a sudden. Generally when you come in touch with Krishna consciousness, you have to kick out everything else that you learned. It's so-called learns, and now I finally understand, But if you are committed to some philosophy, say, I'll give my favorite example. Forgive me, those who've heard me. Communism, Marxism, Leninism. I used to be a Marxist-Leninist, I confess. That was my religion. I didn't have any faith in God. I had faith in the rule of the proletariat, the common worker and the man, I believed the propaganda. And it was, believe me, there were some of the brightest minds of the age were writing books justifying this philosophy and so forth. And it went on for how many years? Actually, it's in 1850 is when he wrote the Marxist Communist Manifesto. And all that years, and then it became prominent after the Russian Revolution. But there are so many books and schools and teachers and so many things. All of it turned to dust. Anyone who believes that now is, even the Chinese don't believe it. They're, it's communist China. Yeah, right. They're more capitalist than we are. There's go, capitalism, investment. It's all simply dust now. So that philosophy is a big attachment. People died for it. Shishi Gornatai Kijai Jagannapala Dev Sabadjikiji Radha Giridhari Kijai. What to speak of the things of this world, other people. So that requires austerity and in knowledge. Jai Shishi Radha Giridhari. So this life is actually made for austerity. Human life is meant for tapasya, according to Lord Rishabhdev. Nayam deho deha bhajang niloke kashtam kama anadade vidbujange tapo divyam putra kai na sattvam shuddhe jasma brahma sokyam tvanantam. Very nice verse about the importance of tapasya. We don't like to think of that. The general default is to let me be as comfortable as possible and enjoy as much as possible. But that's the life of the animals. The animals think like that too. The life of human beings is meant for divine penance or divine austerity. Tapo divyam. Tapo means literally to burn. And we have to burn out some of these impurities. So he's speaking to his son, putraka yena sattvam shuddhye. By this austerity, the being, your existence, becomes purified. Of what I mentioned before, these anartas, lust, anger, greed, attachments. And then what happens? Do we merge into the absolute? No. What he says is, yasma brahma saukyam tanantam. With that purified existence, you will come to enjoy unlimited spiritual happiness forever. So really, the desire of the living entity to enjoy is not wrong. We are by nature enjoyers. But we're enjoying now in the wrong way, and so we're just suffering more and more. This brahma saukyam means the pleasure that comes by contact with the supreme Brahman, the supreme spirit. The supreme spirit is a person. And that person is Krishna. Why Krishna? Because he's attractive in all ways, all personal ways. Beauty, personality, activities, lila, name, everything is attractive about Krishna. Infinitely attractive. And so, and love. Everyone wants to be loved. If you're not loved in this world, it's a very impossible, dry existence. Everyone needs to love and be loved. We know the tragedy in Romania. They have these kids, there's too many children. You know, so many children were born and they have no parents. They put them in orphanages, improper care. They grow up, they're completely autistic, damaged, they have no affect, nothing. Without care of a parent. Love is as important to growing up and to existence as food is. So now we have our love with our family and so forth, you know, if we're fortunate, but it's temporary. And it's not satisfying, fully satisfying to the soul. That is only can be satisfied in relation to God. Infinite and unending love, loving exchange. But it means we need to be completely selfless without that false ego that is keeping us bound here. So jnana and tapasa, through knowledge and the right kinds of austerities, what does that mean? It means chant Hare Krishna, give up illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. Those are the basic austerities in this age. And they're also the basic pillars of life, sinful life. Just think about it. Each year, gambling. Oh my God. You know, when I was a child, gambling was known to be a sin. You know, it was only allowed in certain places. You have to go to the racetrack or Las Vegas. Yeah. Now it's everywhere, all pervading. Internet, you know, kids 13, 14 are getting on the internet and bankrupting their parents with their stolen credit cards. It's horrible, you know. So that you have to give up. Illicit sex, you have to control that, because that'll keep you bound up birth after birth. The primary attraction, you know, attachment. Meat eating, tremendous sin. People don't know. It's all hidden. Yeah, go to McDonald's, who cares, you know. But you know, if you're a little intelligent, you look, well, what are you actually doing? You know, you're furthering this horrible institution of massive cow slaughter. Of sentient feeling beings, the cow, the mother, the personified religion. It's horrible. People don't know. It's ignorance. That's why gyan, you have to have knowledge, a little knowledge and sensitivity. And of course, intoxication. We're already intoxicated. And then to try to further that with some artificial means just brings the curtain down tighter and tighter on your consciousness. We have to wake up. We have to become sober up rather than to become more and more intoxicated. So these are the austerities, and puta, becoming purified, madbhava magata. So this word bhava means two things. It means here, as Prabhupada translates it, love, one attains love for me, and one attains to my nature as well. One becomes more and more aware of one's own spiritual nature in relationship to God, in Krishna, and one can begin to experience some of the higher realms, even in this life, of Krishna consciousness. So this is Krishna's promise here. And next verse, which we won't read, but I'll just mention it, is that it's all up to us. He says, as you surrender to me, or as they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. We have free will. We can ignore Krishna life after life. And, you know, suffer. Although we're ignoring him personally, we're still serving him. In the form of his external energy. If we become totally absorbed in this energy, this earth, water, fire, air, ether, the objects of the senses, then we'll get some reciprocation. Who can deny it? But will it fulfill us? Will it satisfy the deepest needs of the soul? No. At the end of life, we'll be totally disappointed. We'll be desiring so many things that we can't have. We'll be carrying a huge burden of karma from this sinful activity. And then we'll get another body, maybe human, maybe not, to try to continue to fulfill our desires through this energy. But this energy is nothing but Krishna. You can't escape him. This is all part of his energy. Actually, God is everywhere. It's simply that we can't perceive because we've covered ourselves with the Maya. So however we surrender, Krishna reciprocates perfectly. The gopis wanted to serve Krishna in a certain way, and he reciprocated with the rasa dance. His mother wanted to serve him as a parent. He reciprocated as a little child. You see? Even Kamsa, you know, he was always thinking of Krishna. He wanted to kill him. Okay, I'll kill you. Yeah? But he was absorbed in Krishna. He was better off than our petty little demons here who never think of Krishna. So the point I'm trying to make now, as we prepare for the appearance of Krishna, we should, first of all, be very thankful that the Lord has come, that he came 5,000 years ago, that he spoke the Bhagavad Gita, that he enacted his pastimes, that he sent his representatives to help us. This sense of gratitude should impel us to practice the disciplines of devotional service. If we haven't begun chanting, we should start chanting the holy name. And in this way, associate with Krishna and take up the Yuga Dharma. This is the special benediction for this age, the chanting. And if we are already practicing, we should intensify our practice through this sense of thankfulness and gratitude to the Lord for coming. And we can anticipate celebrating on Wednesday. And then the very next day, by Krishna's arrangement, Krishna's pure devotee appeared. We can have the Vyasa Puja of Srila Prabhupada. It's a great time to increase and reconfirm ourselves in devotional service. Because time is passing. You know, each one of us is 1 week older than we were a week ago. We're all heading toward our destination. And we need to be agents of the Lord. We're part of the army. We may not think of it, but we're on the battlefield, just as Arjuna was. And all of us, within ourselves, we're also battling our tendency to go toward the dark side. And to the degree that we're going to the light side, we have a responsibility to spread that light. And I'll end with this one verse. Of course, the Srimad Bhagavatam is an expansion on all these teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. The basis of our whole philosophy and movement is Bhagavad Purana. So in that Bhagavad Purana, it's described, Krishna svadhamo pagate dharma jnana nibi saha karo nashtra dushamesha purana ko dhunoritaha. So we're speaking about the advent of Krishna as a great benediction. And now this describes what happens when he leaves. So this describes Krishna svadhamo pagate, Krishna having returned to his dhamma and taking with him, because he's personified dharma and jnana, religion and knowledge, he took it with him. No longer on this earth can we see the personified form of religion and pure knowledge as Krishna. But for the benefit of these residents of the Kali Yuga, whose vision has been obscured, benighted by ignorance, Karo nashta drisham, their vision has been destroyed through sinful activity. Puranako dunoritaha, that this Bhagavad Purana, which describes in detail Krishna's pastimes and so much wonderful philosophy expanding on Bhagavad Gita, that this has become like the sun, the brilliant sun, to give us the vision to follow the path of bhakti. So it is a great benediction. Krishna never really abandons us. He comes personally. When he leaves the holy name, he leaves the Bhagavad Gita, he leaves the Srimad Bhagavatam, he leaves his great representatives. So it is up to us to reciprocate and to take our step forward and take advantage of these great facilities that have been given to us. So if there is some discussion, we can entertain now. Thank you very much for your attention. I'll read one more verse. Actually, I want to share with you one little poem that I recently wrote. This is a prayer following in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who taught us to pray only for one thing, really. and that is service and love for Krishna. It's not that we should come to Krishna, the Lord, and pray for something material. If we have to do that, let's pray to Krishna. But better to pray simply for love. So this is a prayer describing Krishna and in that mood. Bhujanga ripa chandra ka sputata khanda chudankore niranka shadra ghanchala brahmina bodhna bringam brahme patanga tu hutastati vanukuti rakeli priye paras pudutu me mahus twahi mukunda shudharati. You wear the best of crests, a crown of perfect peacock plumes. Your dancing glances stun the bees meandering midst the blooms. You relish love play in the cottage by Kalindi's shore. O Krishna, may pure love for you be mine forevermore. So that is my little prayer, and I thought I'd share it with you, just as a gift. So any questions or comments on these few points? We can entertain them now. Yes, Prabhu. Jai. Jai Sharma, his name is. Go ahead, Prabhu.
The company of
Krishna.
Yeah, and like a tree, birds, animals, everything. So why the focus is through the Bhagavad Gita? Why the focus is on human beings in particular?
Okay, the question is, in Goloka Vrindavan, everyone, the birds, the trees, gopis, gopas, etc., all enjoy the company of Krishna. So why are we focusing so much on human beings here in this world? We should be focusing on Goloka Vrindavan. Is that what you're saying? Because our whole consciousness is absorbed here. To really understand what's going on in Goloka Vrindavan, we have to start from step one. It's just like a musician, right? Krishna Priya is there. Great musician. See, so does she start out immediately singing all of these wonderful ragas and things? No. The teacher is saying, you know, the thing with arpeggios, you have to learn so many things, right? Step one, two, three, establish the voice. Or if you want to play an instrument, can I even pick up the violin and immediately play, you know, Mozart? No. Similarly, in our quest for enlightenment, we have to go step by step, as in any other process. So you begin from where you're at. And where we're at is definitely the bodily concept of life. And so that's why Krishna says immediately, Ashochan and Vashochastram, Pragyavaran Shabashase. Arjuna, you're lamenting while speaking so-called learned words. You're lamenting for what is not worthy of grief, namely this material body. Now that itself is a very advanced position. How many of you lament for the body? All of us, you know. Well, where's my youth? Where's my beauty? You know, now I'm 50. I used to be 30. Come on. How many wrinkles? Yeah. That's a shochan and a shochastram. You know, what to speak of if a loved one dies? It's very difficult, you know, especially suddenly. How to avoid getting, you know, into the whirlpool of lamentation and illusion. So this is where we're at. Krishna knows exactly where we're at, and he gives us a lesson that we need. You know, we need to hear this. You know, yakshastavidamutrijavartate kamakaratahanasa siddhamavapnodi nasukamnaparamgatim. This is about as close as Krishna comes to, you know, fire and brimstone, you know, in the Christian preachers. You know, we have plenty of that in the Bhagavatam. But if you don't follow the Shastra, and you continue to act on the impulses of material desire and lust, then you'll never get perfection. You'll never get happiness, and you'll never get the supreme goal. Then what happens to me? Oh, down in the species, you know, hellish life. We need that. We need to hear that. Now, when we begin to practice Krishna consciousness and becoming a little bit purified, fine. You know, let's hear Krishna Leela. Now, we should hear from the beginning. But we have to have this also, a very firm thing. I like to give the analogy, you know. Durga Devi, she had so many weapons, right? So one of the weapons he has is this trident, right? Which represents, I think, the threefold miseries, or three modes, and the threefold miseries. So part of knowledge we find in the 13th chapter. Janma, mrityu, jara, vyari, dukkha, dosha, anudarshanam. You know, how many times do we have to hear this? You know, we say we don't want to be impelled by fear, but there's a certain healthy fear of maya, of illusion and misery in this world that we need to begin Krishna consciousness. You know, it shouldn't become our only motivation. But it, so he says, birth, old age, disease, and death. Seeing the evil of this, or the danger of this, is part of knowledge. So Durga Devi is right behind us with that trident, giving us a good, you know, jolt. Okay, you know. Let me practice devotional service. Otherwise, threefold miseries. Yeah, birth and death. Very good. But Krishna is also in front. He's inviting us. Come to me. Come to Goloka. Come to my service. Come and dance with me in the groves of Vrindavan. So on one side we have the attraction of Krishna, and on the other side we have the reminder of the miseries of this world. What more do we need? You know, if even within that, with all of that, and the advantage of this knowledge, we're not ready to practice bhakti yoga, or any kind of yoga, you know, then we're just fools. We're just throwing away the precious human form of life. So the answer is that, yes, we want to absorb our mind in Goloka, but we have to do it in the proper way when we actually have the adhikari, or the eligibility to do that. And in the meantime, let's go and understand, who am I? What is this world? You know. And what are the threefold miseries? And how can I progressively become detached from this world and attached to Krishna? That's the answer. Any other question or comment? Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.